Hi, this is Bobby Lee from Mad TV. Yes. Yo, what's up? This is Pauly Shore, San Diego. You're listening to my sister's radio station, Sandy Seashore. Check it out.
Thank you for joining us worldwide. It's time to fix what ails you. And everyone knows that laughter is the best medicine. So we've gone right to the first family of comedy, to the lady who wrote the book, Sandy Seashore. Yes, that's her real name. Only a comedian would name their kid Sandy Seashore. Well, what do you expect when your family owns the world-famous comedy store? If laughter's the best medicine, well, then Sandy, she's Dr. Feelgood. Hey, thanks for being here. Tonight, Sandy will check in with the world-famous comedy store to find out who's on stage and hear the inside story of what's really happening backstage and on the Hollywood Strip. She'll help you laugh and learn with some real news. And, of course, hide the dog biscuits because Sonny Shore is on the loose. He's smarter than Lassie and looks better than Ren 1010. And this is one dog that knows his comedy. And now, here's the seashore that's not in your geography book. A lady with so much talent, she's worldwide at sandyshore.com. Welcome to Happy Hour with Sandy Seashore.
Does the week go? It's Thursday. How you doing, everybody? I have a great show tonight. This is Sandy Seashore. How you doing, everybody? I have a great show tonight. This is Sandy Seashore. My dog Sonny has a new magic eight ball, and he wants you guys to ask questions so he can give you a psychic answer, a psychic reading. We have Tommy from the Comedy Store, the town coordinator, comedian Naveed Mahboob from India. He was just back from India, and Alan Stevens, who was the executive producer of Roseanne, Arliss, and the list goes on. So let's just welcome Tommy on tonight. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, Sandy. How you doing?
Pretty good. So first of all, Sonny is here with he's got the magic eight ball.
That's great.
So can you ask him a question? Drop the ball, Sonny. Drop it. Okay, ask him a question.
Okay. Is Barack Obama going to beat Hillary Clinton?
This is without a doubt.
Okay.
But you have to remember, this was made in China.
Okay.
Good boy, Sonny. Good boy. Okay.
How is he doing? Is he doing okay?
My dog?
Yeah.
He's growing. He's a year and 8 months, or a year and 7 months old, or something like that. Yeah, he's still a baby, though. But he's doing really well. He's filling out. His hair is almost done. It's a white collie, if anybody doesn't know. He's a white collie. And we have two dog shows coming up this month. Very excited about. I have Alan Stevens on tonight.
Oh, Alan's great.
Yeah, he's been around since the Comedy Store started.
He's a comedy legend.
Yeah.
He has inside stories that are even more interesting than Argus's.
Uh-huh. What's going on up there, up on the Sunset Strip?
Well, we're having a good weekend coming up. You know, tomorrow night, February 8th, is the release of Vince Vaughn's Wild West comedy show, which features comics that were, you know, born from the Comedy Store.
Where is that? Is that a movie release?
Movie theaters, yeah.
Wow.
John Caparulo.
Well, don't people like to just watch that kind of thing on television?
This will be interesting because it's not just seeing a stand-up show. This is about a tour that goes on and about the guys and their lives and everything. I saw Vince Vaughn on David Letterman last night, and he was talking about it. And it's just really neat because as he's talking about these guys, these are the guys that I've been watching your mom bring in and develop in here over the past 6-7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very exciting.
And one of my students is in it, Sebastian.
Sebastian's in there,
yeah,
Brett Ernst, Ahmed Ahmed, and John Caparulo.
Okay. The latest.
They're all going to be great. And that's a big exciting thing for us, you know?
On the news today, L.A. had, there was a big shootout up there today.
Yeah.
Did you hear that on the news?
No, I didn't.
Oh, the SWAT team,
it's a dangerous city. There's a lot of crazy people here.
It is dangerous, isn't it?
Well, you have a lot of people. I mean, in this kind of a circumference, you would usually have maybe a million or less live, and this has 6 million people in it, so we're all on top of each other.
Oh, and everybody's packing, right?
Well, some people are.
When I lived up there above the Sunset Strip, there was gunfire practically every night.
Yeah.
Or sirens, one of the two.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it can be. So we got a great show coming down there this weekend, Sandy.
Oh, great. Okay.
Ian Edwards is headlining down there. He's from he's been on Saturday Night Live. He's from Def Comedy Jam. He's has a HBO special. He had a half-hour Comedy Central special, and he's really, really good. And he's going to be headlining. Also, Freddie Lockhart's going to be down there with him. He's middling the show, and he's someone your mom's totally developed. He's now featured on TBS and Comedy Central, and he has his own website where, believe it or not, he does all kinds of different characters. One of the characters he does is me.
Really? What
yeah, eternally optimistic about things that you shouldn't be or something. I don't know.
Oh, that's pretty
good. Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm.
And like he does the character on there, he puts a blonde wig on and acts like me. And
oh, that's cute.
Isn't it funny? But the point is, Freddie's very funny. And then Doc Willis, which is a guy that has been an employee here and has been working out here for a while, and he's doing really good. And the thing that's interesting for the show is that all the comics in the show are black. They're all black this weekend.
Oh, okay.
And they're all, you know, kind of at different stages in their careers. Ian's the most experienced, but it's going to be a good show. I checked with the manager. The ticket sales are really good.
Well, I'll have to go check it out.
So it's going to be a strong show. And we found out Jeff Garlin's coming down there again in towards the end of March.
Oh, okay.
Jeff Garlin from Curb Your Enthusiasm, for those listening.
And, there's a big life expo up in L.A. this weekend I might drive up for.
Nice.
It's at the LAX airport. And a lot of the BBS radio hosts are going to be there.
Good.
I'm thinking about going up there.
Sounds great.
For just a, you know, part of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the hotel lets dogs in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be bringing my dog if I go.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I'm always looking to hear new and interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
The weather's been so cold, but...
It has, but it's finally nice now, huh?
Right, this week it's warming up.
Yep.
It's been the coldest winter. I can't ever remember a colder winter in San Diego.
It's consistently cold since I've been here in these 6 years, yeah.
Yeah, it's biting cold.
Well, it's at night and it gets below 40 in Los Angeles. It's like, I know that doesn't sound much to people in other parts of the country, but that's unbelievable here.
Like people, all they're doing is shoveling snow. I mean, it's just been really, in Chicago where my brother lives.
Yeah.
They've had some snow coming in now.
Oh, yeah.
So as far as the sunset goes, that's, everything's doing really well as far as... We have, in case people don't know, there's three rooms at the Comedy Store. If somebody's interested in learning the art of stand-up comedy, you put your set together and go and perform during open mic. And everybody knows I teach stand-up comedy in La Jolla, but I have a little book out through Amazon. You just go to the BBS website, and it's called Secrets to Stand-Up Success, and that will help you put a comedy routine together in your own home. And I'm planning on doing some online courses later on, maybe in the spring. So that's going to be something new. And the Earth is going through a lot of changes right now, and we really need to be light about things. Like,
yeah,
I think
true.
Part of the economy is in a recession. Not everyone's in a recession, but part of the economy is. And comedy and entertainment always go strong during these kind of times.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, we've actually had a lot of people coming in, but you know, I really feel like people need to laugh.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't hurt that we have some really talented comics who are exploding right now.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you're doing really good booking the shows down here.
Trying.
So, yeah, it's doing really well.
It's been doing pretty well, so we hope we can keep on our path there. But also in times, too. This month and next month are usually good down there. Spring break is next month.
Ah.
And so it's usually pretty good. But,
okay.
You know, these are like, you know, as well as when you look at the show, Sandy, they're speckled with people that started in your class. This is the group that's here now.
Yeah.
Modern comedy is here, America. It's here.
Yep.
There's a lot of great comics that you know, the Robin Williams and the Jim Carreys and all these people. But if you look out there right now, there is a lot of people that are right there in their early, mid-30s, been at this craft for 10 years, and they're coming out full guns blazing.
Now they are, yeah. It's time. What do you say, like every 10 years a new generation pops up, or 8 years?
The way
years?
It seems. You know, your mom passed a lot of these people between 98 and 2006.
And that's how long it takes. It's not something you can do in like 3 weeks.
And then we got Mark Maron, who's just come back in here, who actually worked here in the late 80s when Sam Kinison was ruling the school.
Mm-hmm.
He and Carlos Mencia were the parking lot guys together.
I remember.
Or as it was, AKA back then, Ned Horton.
But, you know, I'm just trying to explain to people how long it takes to develop. It's not something that, you know, you just go put a comedy routine together and wait to be discovered.
That's what the movie really shows. The movie, the Vince Vaughn Wild West Comedy Show, it really shows that it brings it into total light for people that this is a craft, that it's an art form, that people don't always take in consideration what takes into to becoming one of these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
I think it takes about 5 to 8 years.
Before you're really interesting, and then they can get better after that.
Yep.
Ian Edwards, the guy's down there this year, is at his 11-year mark. And he's
really?
Strong. He started in New York. Your mom passed him 2.5 years ago.
Wow.
And then she
okay,
like
when that means pass, explain to people what pass
means. Well, it means that I put him in a showcase in front of her, and your mom looked at him for 45 seconds. Nobody was laughing. He's just talking, and she says, he's great. Put him on immediately.
Wow.
I thought to myself the same thing. I think, how do you know that lady? How do you know that? No one's even laughed yet. He didn't even finish the joke. And he is one of the best comics. He is one of the best.
What does he look for when she's...
We know. It's kind of a mystery. I try to recite back to her what I think. That's as much as she'll tell me. I just say, I know that you look for inner qualities. And she goes, it's true. I said, it's not about whether their joke's good or not. You look past the jokes they're telling to what's inside so you can see what can come out. She goes, that's true.
So it's the potential she sees.
Right. She says, she told me before, she goes, I can see the seed inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then she turns to me, she goes, just like I can see yours.
Ah.
Well, that's why she has so strongly said that she wanted me to continue to do the work that you even know that I'm doing here that she trained me for, because she knows what I'm able to do here, right?
No, you're very good at what you do.
Well, I care. You know, I told her the thing. I worked for an Armenian man once, and he said a very important line I liked. He goes, why he liked me working for him, because he didn't want to like me, because everyone told him that he should like me, which made him not like me, okay? And kind of what happened to Jerry Seinfeld with your mom, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But this is what he did. After I worked there for a year, and he gave me a hard time, he called me up, and he goes, I'm not mad at you anymore, kid. And I said, you're not? And he goes, no. You know why? I go, why? He goes, because you care.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you can't pay people to care. They either do or they don't.
That's a good point.
Isn't that a good point?
That's a really good point.
And that was by a man who came from living with four brothers and sisters in a one-bedroom apartment in New York to being worth $250 million.
Wow.
Strong man.
Wow.
You know? I was impressed with him.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
lovely,
I mean, it's side of that, you know.
Okay,
but anyway,
gonna...
I hope those shows go good, and it's nice hearing from you, Sandy.
You too, and I'll talk to you next week.
Tell Alan Stevens that I said hello.
I will.
Okay, I'll talk to you
Thank
later.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to be right back. This is Sandy Shore. You're listening to Happy Hour on BBS Radio. We're coming back with Naveed Mahboob, a comedian from India that I've been working with him for about the last 3 years. So stay tuned. Be right back.
You're listening to Happy Hour. No, not that kind of happy hour. The lighten up and smile kind of happy hour. More with Sandy and Sunny Shore in a minute. People visit websites with a goal in mind. To learn more. To buy a product or service. To be convinced or reassured about something, to register for information, or for any number of other reasons. By understanding your customers' goals and motivations, we can create an intuitive experience to match. In an ever-changing online environment, new trends, technologies, and expectations demand that your website be interactive and constantly updated. Customers want to see new information, news, reviews, product and services, success stories, blog entries, press releases, pictures, and so much more. To keep up with the rapid pace of technological change and customer expectations, Creative Momentum offers a full suite of web tools and ideas to enhance your online image. Visit our website at creativemomentum.net for more information on all affordable services we offer. That's creativemomentum.net. Welcome back to Happy Hour with Sandy and Sunny Shore. If you want to find out more about comedy, visit sandyshore.com. And now, here's the lady that wrote the book on comedy, Secrets to Stand-Up Success, best-selling author and comedy coach, Sandy C. Shore. Oh, yeah, it's Sunny. We'll be right back.
Jack. Thank you for sticking with us. We've got Naveed on the line. Naveed, thank you for being on the show tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you're welcome. Now, you don't know this, but we have this this thing called the Magic 8 Ball, and my dog, Sonny, has it in his mouth. And so what he wants you to do is ask him a question, and he's going to drop the ball, and then we're going to see what the answer is.
Okay. Will I, through my comedy, will I be able to make changes in people's lives? Big question.
Okay, the answer says without a doubt. Yay! Good boy, Sonny! Good boy, see, my dog's psychic.
Yeah, I'm so happy to hear that answer.
So, okay, Naveed started my classes about 3 years ago. Was that been about when you started?
That's right.
Okay, and when you first started, you were doing, like, jokey jokes.
That's right.
And it took a while to get you to stop doing that, because we don't tell jokes.
Yes.
Right? We do pieces and bits and stories and things like that.
Absolutely.
Now, one thing I tell everyone is they have to find their audience. They have to find their following. And you had this monster breakthrough within the last few weeks, actually, it seems. You went to your home back to Bangladesh?
That's right.
Okay. You went to Bangladesh. Tell everybody what happened.
Well, I went to Bangladesh, and this was really the first time I went back after I made it public, meaning I broke the news to everybody that I am a stand-up comedian. Sandy, I kind of had kept it under wraps for the first year and a half. Only my wife knew. Of course, you knew. And only the people who saw me at comedy clubs. But then, so this was my first time I went back that they knew that Naveed is not only an engineer, but he's a comedian, and he's been doing pretty well in the U.S.
Now, in the early years, you were in show business back in India. You did TV commercials,
yes,
things like that.
Yes, I did. And I'm actually, I'm actually from Bangladesh. And there, when I was in college, I did 4 TV commercials. So, and I did some radio. I did a little bit of TV.
I want everybody to know that you went about a year or so ago. You went to Las Vegas and did a comedy competition, and you came first place.
Yes, and it was the 2007 original Las Vegas Comedy Festival,
and that's out of 81 male comics, right?
Yes, 72.
Okay.
And they picked a best male and a best female, so I was the best male. And these were not voting. These were actually industry judges. They were owners of the big comedy clubs, Ridley's Comedy Castle. And
what do you think set you apart from everyone else?
The feedback I got, because there actually was a feedback session the day after the performance, but before they announced the winners, and everybody said you were such a breath of fresh air because you were clean, you were non-offensive, you made us think through your humor at some of the things that we tend to overlook. So you really not only made us laugh, but you made us think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they appreciated the most, and especially that they were saying that you were clean, you were 100% clean. That's what we liked.
And I try to drive that point across in class. A lot of people want to work dirty, and it's so boring. Dirty, blue humor is very boring. Now, then you went to India, and you just sent me this tremendous email about this huge, tell everybody what happened to you out there.
Okay, went to Bangladesh. Actually, it was Bangladesh, that's where I'm from.
And by the way, there is no comedy clubs out there.
No, there isn't, and there is really no such thing as a stand-up scene the way we know it in the West.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went there, and this was the time when they knew, okay, Naveed is doing stand-up comedy professionally in the U.S. And so what happened when I went there, there was quite a bit of a sensation. And another thing I probably should mention here is that for the last 6 months, I have also been doing comedy in Bengali. That's my first language. So I've been doing a lot of professional shows here in Southern California, where the audience is completely expatriate Bangladeshis, and that got a lot of traction.
Now, do you do the same exact material, or do you have to change things around?
Oh, no, it's 90% different, because one of the things you taught me in class is that humor is something that the audience need to relate to. So when I do my Bengali routine, it is totally, it is almost 90% different than what I do in my English routine.
Like,
and then, yes?
Oh, well, I'd like to hear an example of how you change it around.
Okay, for example, the Bangla, the Bengali routines that I've done here, I mean, the basic format is still the same, that you teach, you know, premise, punchline, segue, callbacks. That's all there, and that's why they enjoyed it so much. But the material is, for example, the Bangladeshi immigrant community, okay? What are the challenges they face in this society? They have kids who are growing up in the U.S. They're Americans, but the parents are Bangladeshis, and they have this big communication gap. So a humor based on that, for example. The fact that we all drive Toyotas, you know, it's something you may or may not have noticed. So, you know, little things, but they relate. Well, yeah, you know what, you're right. We have seen that in our lives. So things like that. And, you know, the outsourcing joke, which I do in my English routine, I don't do that as much because, you know, they're on the other side of this outsourcing fence. You know, they are the ones who are taking the jobs away.
Right. Oh, okay. So these are a few examples,
yeah.
Now, you talked about maybe opening a comedy club in India.
Yeah, actually it's Bangladesh. And, in fact, that was one of the reasons I made this trip, to kind of do a showcase. So I did quite a few shows, live shows, and then I was on TV in four channels, and they're all, you know, scrambling, saying, hey, we want to do some kind of a comedy-based show. And that's when I realized that it's the time is right, and there is no such thing as a comedy club. People have money, and the only thing they can do when they go out in the evening is go to a restaurant. It is a very conservative Muslim country.
Now, there's no comedians out there, so how are they going to keep it going?
Well, that's the big challenge. There is one gentleman who's been, you know, quote-unquote a comedian, but he's more skit type of a person, and he's more physical humor as opposed to cerebral humor. And so that is one big challenge that I have to figure out. Okay, fine, I can be there, but, you know, it takes time to write new material, and I can go on for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, but people are not going to come back to see the same jokes all the time.
Right.
So that's another thing I have to figure out, how to have a constant replenishment of comedians. And one of the things I've been thinking about is there's a big comedy scene in Dubai, for example. There's a big comedy scene in Hong Kong, just because there are so many expatriate population over there, like British and Europeans and Americans. Mm-hmm. They live in Dubai, and they, because the expatriate community, they have not a whole lot of recreation in the evenings, and then if there's a comedian, it's a big thing. And so one of the things I've been thinking about is to talk to those people, if they have their rotating comedians, to see if I can, you know, bring those comedians
right
in.
Well, we have some of our comedians that were just in Dubai, or Dubai, whatever, however you say it.
Yeah, yeah. Dubai is a big scene, absolutely.
Right, we had them, yeah. And then you said the ex-president of India was in the audience watching you?
Yes, that was a very funny incident, because the first ever live show that I did was actually on Christmas Day, and it was at the Dhaka Club, and Dhaka is the capital city. And that's a very, very prestigious club, and they were having their annual elections. And, you know, and that club is frequented by the most powerful people, businessmen,
mm-hmm.
You know, the top military brass and everybody. And so I was told to do a show there, and I was briefed specifically that do not make fun of the military, because in that part of the world you don't do that. And then they said you have to speckle in a little
bomb
bit.
Bomb the bay? Remember that joke you do? You go bomb the bay?
I'm sorry, what?
That joke you do.
Yes.
When you make reference to bomb the bay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That actually, you know,
tell people what that is, that joke.
Oh, that joke is about Homeland Security, that, you know, I'm a Muslim. I kind of make this joke that they're tapping my phones, and maybe they are tapping this conversation as we speak, who knows. But I call up my friend in Bombay, and I kind of speak in my own language. And the only word that they pick up is the word Bombay. And here's how I go. Bombay. And then Homeland Security goes, code red. There's a plot to bomb the bay.
So You cannot do material like that.
No, that I can, because then I'm making fun of the Department of Homeland Security in the
U.S.
Okay. But here's the thing, that this former president, he's a three-star general who came to power through a military coup, and that was the time when I was a college kid, and over there college kids are very active as far as, you know, establishing democracy is concerned. So we actually did a lot of protests against this guy, and eventually he had to step down from power. So I had a lot of joke about this guy, and it so happened that he was sitting in the audience. Now he was in jail, and now he's out, and it was pretty funny that I was going to make jokes about him, and he was sitting in the audience.
Oh my God!
Now in the West, in the U.S., you can have Bush in the audience and make fun of him. It's not a big deal, but over there, you know, I could get locked up or something, you know, or, you know, mm-hmm. he's going to have his thugs out for me.
I guess you have to be so politically correct everywhere, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, the fact is, before we leave, can you do your globalization piece for everyone? That's my favorite piece you do.
Okay, sure. And my globalization thing is that, you know, we are living in a global economy today. And it doesn't matter if you're in Uzbekistan or if you're in Boston, you're really, you know, doing the same kind of work. And here's what I mean. This shirt I'm wearing right now, it says black shirt I'm wearing. It was made in Vietnam. Then it was shipped on a Singaporean vessel with an Indonesian crew, then offloaded at the Los Angeles, California port by Mexicans, then loaded onto a San Diego-bound Korean truck with a Japanese engine and a Guatemalan driver. Then I put my black shirt on, which was made in Vietnam. I get into my German Volkswagen. I go down to the comedy store in La Jolla, bring with me my Nokia cell phone, made in Finland, but with my credit card, made in China, a transaction processed in India by Apu using a Dell computer, designed in the U.S., assembled in Malaysia using a microprocessor chip from Taiwan. That's called globalization.
It's great. It's great. Naveed, you'll be on again soon. We'll put you back on.
Okay,
congratulations
great.
About your huge success in India. You're probably so busy right now trying to figure out you know, how to organize it all, I'm sure.
Yes, very busy.
So I'll give you a hand.
Okay.
I'll do that. I'm back from my mental vacation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Naveed.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, have a great evening.
You too.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to a quick break again. Coming back is Alan Stevens, the executive producer of Roseanne. Don't go away, anybody. Everybody, thank you for listening. This is Sandy Shore, and we'll be right back. Sandy Seashore with Alan Stevens. Alan, welcome to the show.
How you doing?
It's called Happy Hour, by the way.
Oh, I was still intrigued by the voice that counted this in. He sounded like very professional.
Very professional.
He ought to make some kind of tapes that put you to sleep. He has that soothing kind of voice. And one, two. He was very smooth.
And we're back on in three,
yeah.
Two,
yeah,
one.
Really. Is it like from a late-night jazz station?
Mm-hmm. Now, you're coming from L.A.
Yeah, I'm in L.A.
Are you in, like, a Studio City area?
Uh-huh.
Okay, my dog has this magic eight ball. Everyone now has to ask a question. Bring the ball, Sonny. Come. Good boy. Okay, ask the question, and he'll drop the ball.
Will Britney Spears stop driving around the neighborhood?
Okay, and the answer is, and as you know, this ball was made in China, so...
Well...
There's no okay, the answer is, come on, what is it?
The answer is, if you're holding this, you have lead poisoning.
Oh, Everything from China is like a bomb now. I can't read this. Okay. Maybe I need glasses. Oh, here it goes. It says, everybody's like, come on already. Signs point to yes.
Okay, it's clear now.
All right, there you go. Woohoo, Sunny,
oh,
the psychic reading.
Light bulb.
Woohoo! Now, everyone, Alan and I go back to the teen years. I've known Alan my whole life. Can you, and you used to babysit my brother, Paulie.
Well, Peter and Paulie, and then Paulie and I shared one of the condos in La Jolla for about, I don't know, 5 months, 4 months.
You were living down here?
Yeah, he and I lived in, I think, what was called your mom's condo then.
Okay, yep.
And
condo.
That was for a summer, and that's when she made me a headliner. So I was there, I think, longer than any person's ever performed there in a row. I was
now,
there 4 or 5 months straight.
Paulie just turned 40.
He's finally older than me.
What?
He's older than me, finally.
Uh-huh.
He turned 40?
He turned 40 February 1st, same birthday as Priscilla Presley, Marie.
Okay, so when I come around.
Lisa Marie.
He used to throw water from the balcony of the house onto some of the comics. He couldn't have been but 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm. Look at this, 40-year-old.
Yeah.
Can you believe this? He's just, you know, he's just kind of crusty now. And now you, okay, just a real brief background. You were the executive producer of The Roseanne Show.
And Arliss.
And Arliss, that was HBO.
Yeah, and last year on HBO, a show called Assume the Position, which I was nominated for a Writers Guild Award.
Oh, okay. And you do a lot of, by the way, Alan is a brilliant writer, I just have to tell you that. I'd ever want to ever do a project with you one of these days before we get turned senile. I would really like to do that.
Well, let's see what happens. The strike's going to be over soon, I think.
I'm not paying attention to it, but all I know is there's nothing on TV.
No.
It's bad.
No. Well, let's see. I had 3 projects about to go. We'll see what happens if they're still there when the strike is over.
And the strike is... didn't they settle on a lot of this stuff already?
Well, the directors did. The writers didn't. They'll probably talk about it this week and it's settled next week.
Well, they must be hurting out of being out of work.
Oh, everybody is. You know, it's not just the people in front and behind the cameras. You know, restaurants in the area where everybody goes for lunch. And you know, the casting people to, you know, the corner store guy.
The trickle-down effect.
Yeah. And everybody's had enough and... but I think they're finally coming to a happy conclusion.
What would you say is, I mean, when you go back in your memory banks, what was the most memorable times for you?
Whew.
That's a big question.
You
I
know Buddy Hackett,
of...
rest his soul, once told me when I was struggling and suffering that I didn't realize they were the good times.
Wow.
Yeah.
They are. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because you know what happens once you get any kind of success, and you know it's all about money and keeping it and going, and the fun kind of goes out of it.
And then staying on top of it. Well, Gallagher once said he made his first million. Now what? Yeah. Now what? He did it. Look at Jim Carrey. He wrote himself a check for $10 million or something.
What do you mean?
Well, Jim Carrey, before he got rich and famous. Wrote it.
Oh, that he's going to be able to cash out one day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Well, it's interesting. I always believe if we put our mind to something, we can do it.
Well, I think that's with everybody. But
well, what
know,
is this? You know, every time I've done a project for L.A. or Hollywood, it's gotten ripped off. So
well, you know what? There's so many people that there are many things that are similar, and then you never know who you're talking to.
No, it's beyond that. It's like I would confront the person on many occasions, and I go, yeah, well, it's a good idea, so I'm doing it. I mean, stuff like that right in my face.
Well, so, there's an idea, and then there's actually doing it.
Mm-hmm. But don't you have to have, like, an agent to package it, and that's how it works? But
well, if you actually write something, you can't do anything with an idea. If you actually have it fleshed out and everything, then you need an agent.
Yeah, otherwise you might as well forget it.
Well, nobody will see you unless you're represented, as they say.
I had to get a literary agent to get my book published.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that wasn't easy. That took years.
Yeah, and, you know, and not all of them are good.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I happen to be right now with the best agent I've ever been with, so.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
For writing?
Yeah. Writing and producing.
Oh, that's great. That's encouraging.
Oh, he's been just delightful, you know. Then the strike came.
I have to ask you something personal.
Mm-hmm.
So you were married to Sam Kennison's wife's sister.
Yes. So Sam would have been my brother-in-law.
Okay. What happened? Is she gone?
Well, we're separated. I think she's gone. I assume she is. She doesn't live here.
Okay. That's a personal question. I haven't talked to you in so long.
No, I'm still married. I'm just not divorced.
Oh, okay. Where did she go?
Oklahoma.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Where's her sister at? This is Sam Kennison.
Downtown L.A.
Now, Sam Kennison was married for 5 days, and then he died in his car crash.
No, they were married longer than that.
They were?
Yeah, a little longer.
Like 10 days?
Well, but they were together 5-6 years.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, that's for sure.
And then, no, it was longer than that. They got married in Vegas. They went on a honeymoon or something to Hawaii. Well, it was a short period, but it certainly was longer than that.
That was a big thing for him to get married.
Well,
I like those girls.
Third or fourth time.
I like those girls. They were nice girls. Sam's wife and...
Yes.
Yeah, very mm-hmm. nice. And there's a lot of history. And then what do you think is going to happen with the Comedy Store? I mean, Polly wants to run it. We're going to be in big trouble if he starts running it.
Well, wasn't he running it one time before?
I think, I don't know to what extent, but Tommy does the lineup, and Polly has his own ideas.
Who does the lineup?
Well, Tommy does them with my mother still.
Well, yeah.
And then Polly wants to do the lineups himself now.
Well, I don't think she'll allow that.
That's pretty scary.
I don't think she'll allow that.
He'll have a stripper on at 9, at 10.
Well, I don't know if it'll be that wacky, but I'd like to think, you know, some things would change and some things for the better.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see that happening.
Neither does my mother.
You know,
but that's what's been going on.
Uh-huh.
And isn't that something? You raised these boys, and now look at that. They're off. And then Peter's got my other brother, Peter.
Yeah, where is he? He's somewhere
in Chicago
or somewhere? Yeah.
He's got his PhD in psychology.
Uh-huh.
And he's got 2 kids.
So he's a shrink?
Yeah, he is a shrink.
Oh, physician heal thyself. That's hysterical.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We have a very narcissistic family. And we need a shrink in the family.
Absolutely.
In fact, if you're brought up, I was brought up in Beverly Hills. It took me years and years to undo.
Who lived in your house before your family got it?
Lamore or something?
Dorothy Lamore.
Yes.
Yes.
Hollywood.
Somehow next door, a piece of the property wound up with Andy Williams at one point.
That's right, and I think he's still there.
Really?
Is he still there or he
died?
I thought
he moved to Branson and, like, lived above his theater or something.
He did?
Yeah, he's, like, fan of the Andy Williams.
Oh, my God. Well,
I think
he
lives above his theater.
What do you think of the president thing going on? What do you think of, I mean, look at the times now. I mean, part of the economy is in recession. Part of the people are not affected. What do you think, you know?
About.
Where do you see TV going? You know, these
well, TV is just going to be like radio. It almost is now. With TiVo, you can watch whatever you want whenever you want.
Right.
And there's so many stations, like ratings that I used to get for Roseanne. I used to get like a 24 share. A hit show now gets like 9, 10, 12.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's so many channels. Now it'll move to the Internet next, and whatever will come after that.
Yeah, then it'll be holographic.
Yeah.
You push a button, it'll just be in the middle of your room.
Yeah, you know, this will just be like, they thought VHS was going to ruin the world, and then it became CDs, you know.
Right.
And it'll keep advancing. Television will always be there, but it will change. And
there's
part
very,
of that change
very...
will be there'll be a lack of quality.
Yeah,
but on
is...
the other hand, mm-hmm. there's some great educational shows. You know, I don't know what people are into, but there's history stuff, even, like, Dirty Jobs.
Right.
You know, and to me, reality shows are today's soap operas. Because
right.
When I was growing up, Mom stayed home. Well, they lost that audience, so soap operas are struggling for an audience. And I think eventually soap operas are going to disappear, and I think reality shows are like today's soap operas.
They're still going on.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I turn the TV on in the middle of the day and I hear a soap opera, I feel guilty, like I'm supposed to be out working or something.
Yeah. But I think they're struggling now because there's so many people not able to.
There isn't. Well, I have a table.
Yeah, in their defense, when they throw up one of their Come Meet Our Stars.
Right.
Boy, these fans come from all over the world, and they check in the hotels. They talk about these people, their characters, like they're real.
Oh, yeah. It's bizarre. People believe it, you know. And then even the reality is not so reality.
Oh, no, that's all manipulated. Some are actually thinly scripted.
Okay.
Some of them are scripted and ad-libbed, and then all of them are manipulated once they get to the editing room.
A bad example
is if you ever see this Omarosa, who was on a lot of these reality shows, and she was like a mean person. Well, they just cut out anything, a film of her that was good, because they wanted her to be the mean character.
Oh, okay.
So they manipulated in the editing.
Oh, okay. Now, there's not much good quality on TV right now. I mean, it's just really pathetic.
Well, there's some stuff there, but you got to look for it.
What was it like working with Roseanne?
For
anybody listening, I mean, I think they have that question in their mind, like, what was it like being executive producer at Roseanne? And you did some writing for the show as well.
I was there about 4 years.
That's a long time to be with Roseanne.
Well, you know, Roseanne was my friend. I originally saw her on an amateur night in Denver and fought to have her be on the show with me. And then Louis Anderson and I convinced her a couple years later to move to L.A.
Oh, and that's when she went to the Comedy Store.
Yeah, we bought her there.
Well, yeah, you're one of the pioneers of the Comedy Store, Ellen. You go back as far as the Comedy Store goes back.
Well, I think I came in 2 years after they opened their doors.
That would be like 74.
I came 75.
I mean, when I think of you, I think of you as like one of my brothers or some. I mean, Steph, you know.
Your mom's so mad at me all the time.
Yeah, she's mad at everyone.
I know.
What did you do this time?
She thinks I tried to steal the clubs from her. I don't know where she would get that.
Oh, okay. Oh, I think I remember that whole time. Roseanne wanted it.
No, we settled that, and then everything was fine for 5 years, and then all of a sudden she just stopped talking to me, and somebody told me, they told her that I was trying to steal the clubs from her again.
Well, my mom's mind isn't what it used to be.
So. Oh, I know. So you know what? You lash out at the ones you love. What do I care?
Well, Paul Mooney's taking off now.
Well, isn't that great?
Yeah, he's
I love Paul. He's 109 years old, and he looks like he's 40.
Doesn't he? He looks great.
Oh, he's fantastic. First off, nobody deserves it more than him. And anybody that thinks he's racist doesn't get what he does.
He's been doing the same stuff since
business. Well, it's not the same stuff. It's the same point
attitude.
Of view.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of the N-word, which he doesn't use anymore, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But the point is, he can make anything black or white. One night I was at the Comedy Store, and somebody's beeper went off. And Paul Mooney goes, "Who's being paged?" And a black man raised his hand. He goes, "Put down your hand, brother. You only page a white man. You beat the black man." And I stood up, and I said, "That's enough." And I started to walk out. He goes, "Where are you going?" And I go, "How did you make pagers and beepers black and white?" But that's his gift.
Mm-hmm.
That's his gift.
Well, he had a special on, I think, what, HBO or Showtime?
Showtime. In fact, an hour and a half. How many comics do you see do that?
Yeah, no, he's got enough. I mean, he's been around. Who are some of your favorite comedians around now?
Right now?
There's so many new ones, I don't even know who they are anymore.
Well, there's just people that say they're comedians.
Okay.
I think Dave Chappelle is very funny.
Okay.
Very, very funny. I think he might be at the top of my funny list right now.
Isn't this amazing, though? Look at the generations and look how many years. And now kids are looking at it as a career choice, or before it was.
Well, you know when that happened? That happened when comedy... if you remember, there used to be at the Westwood store, the Comedy Store, the line went four blocks and then down two.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and
yeah,
that's because there was no comedy on TV, unless, you know, Dinah Shore had somebody or Johnny. There was steady stream of comedy. So once comedy became a big business, people around the country, especially young kids, could see it, and it became like a midnight special when we were younger, where every Friday night you wanted to see who the bands were.
Yeah.
Well, every Friday night they're going, who are the comedians? Who are the comedians? You know, HBO's pumping out the Young Comedian specials out of the Comedy Store for, what, 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
So in those first 15 years, they turned it into a big, big business, and now a kid can sit home and go, oh, I can do that.
Yeah, it's so different. I mean, it's night and day. If anybody wants to call in and ask Alan any questions, the number is, the toll-free number is 877-876-5227.
Hey, I have a question.
What?
What are we on?
We're on BBS Radio.
Oh, cool.
It's the number one independent radio station on the Internet.
Oh, very cool.
And I've been doing this show since October, but I've been doing serious topics, putting all my, like, UFO stuff and just trying to be myself a little bit. And, it's called Happy Hour. So I thought maybe I should get back to the Happy Hour a little bit. To, you know, people take our, we all take ourselves a little too seriously, and I'm really wanting people to, you know, be able to lighten up a little bit. And, you know, like, if you're having a really bad day, what do you do to get yourself out of it?
I lock the doors and I don't answer the phone and I ride it out.
Really?
Oh, I jump right into my depression. And I ride it out. But,
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I am so sick of hearing about Britney Spears. What is the fascination about her?
Well, here's
it's
the
like
deal
Valley
with me.
Crash.
Here's the deal with me. I live in the neighborhood.
Okay.
In the hood with Miss Spears.
Okay.
And the other day I was at a deli, which I'm not going to name because they overcharge. And I couldn't get out. And I'm going, what's with these 15 cars? And I realize she's in the front of the line. And you know I have that little antique sports car? I still
yes.
have that. So I cut everybody off and I see it's her. And I asked her if she wanted to go with me because she looked terrified. And these guys are cutting me off. So I called the police. And I said, listen, this is not Britney Spears, but there's 20 people running people off the road, making illegal turns. How is it legal? You there?
Yeah.
How is it legal for the paparazzi to be doing this? And I said, I want to report them. And I gave some license plate numbers. And I started really raising a storm. And I guess others had enough, too. Make a long story short, I think in the next few months they're going to have paparazzi laws here.
They have to.
And you know, they're only chasing her at this point because they're hoping she's Anna Nicole Smith and they get the first picture. It's
what
not because they're concerned for her.
What is that big deal about her father taking over her estate? That's disgusting.
Well, it's not disgusting. She's having a tough time mentally right now, and she's in charge of $100 million. And there's just, you know.
But it's her money. She did it herself.
But no. When you're not mentally stable and you have bad people around you, they will take and steal from you. And that's what's going on. So he had to come in and take over.
Well, the news said it went from like 100,000 to like 40-something million. I mean, 400.
Oh, they're saying 40 million, but I'm sure it's maybe they mean last year.
Well, I don't understand what the fascination is about. Why we put people up on pedestals?
Well, I don't think she's on a pedestal. I think they're following her for the wrong reasons. The opposite of that. I think they're waiting for the tragedy and want to be the first ones there. They're waiting for her to die.
They're not
following her because she's a great star right now.
Oh, they're waiting for her to OD.
They're following her because she's a tragic figure that needs help, and she's crying out for it. She drives in and out of the traffic. Stops in gas stations at night. She's with different men. Clearly there's some problem there. Mm-hmm. And the paparazzi is just not helping.
I wonder why her marriage broke up.
Oh, because it should have never happened.
Hmm.
You never marry the background dancer.
I
tell that to all my female singing friends.
Mm-hmm.
Don't marry the backup dancers.
So what do you think's coming up with show business now? I mean, you talked about reality shows earlier. And everything is going to flip over to the computer. That's what's going on for sure.
Well, that's what the strike's about. All the writers weren't getting paid for computer. For the Internet and stuff. So they want a piece of it.
Is that the same concept as TV to cable or something?
Mm-hmm. Then we got a raw deal back then on that one.
Yeah. And then there's just a few big media companies that are controlling everything anyway.
Well, yes and no. Plus, here's what the Internet has done. It's still a new invention in the sense nobody knows where it's going. Crimes are being committed that they don't know how to, you know, fix now.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody could sit home and become famous. on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I think there'll be more people changing show business in the sense that I don't know necessarily if there'll be agents and lawyers in the same sense in a few years that represent these people, because quite frankly, if you can go on YouTube and get attention, what do you need any of those people?
Yeah, you'd go, you're my internet agent.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be a lot more independent people trying to use it. I mean, if you sit with some kids know how to edit. You know, they make these their little family movies.
Yep.
And they got some full-on editing on the computer.
That's exactly right.
You know,
and
so eventually editors, you know, I'm sure editors are hurting.
Yep. You're right. That is what's going on. We can, yep. So we don't need a production. In fact, production companies are going out of business left and right.
Well, you know, they used to do movies, film, and put it through a thing called a moviola. And the only way I can describe it is it looks like a giant iron lung. Mm. And, you know, you had to have a technician that knew how to work that. And it might have taken days to do one or two scenes where you can bang it out in an hour. It's really, so that's what I'm saying. I don't even think they know where this thing's going yet.
And all the cameras that are available now, everything's HD.
Yeah, it's just amazing. It's just amazing.
I can't keep up with it. No one can.
Well, I was in this computer store the other day, and I looked at these iPods, and then it went to a smaller iPod, and then it went to one that was small, about half the size of a Bic lighter. And I went, first off, I'm fascinated that it might hold 1,000, 2,000 songs, but this is what I'd be doing all day. Anybody see where I put it? Anybody see where I put it? It's like this 50-cent piece. I'd be walking around with headset with nothing to plug it into.
So this is, everyone's fascinated about listening to music.
And making it smaller and easy to carry. Well, you know, sooner or later.
Well, I have a cell phone now. I can't even see it.
Oh, forget it. Forget about it. Forget cell phones. Somebody just taught me how to put numbers in a year ago.
No, I know. I've got this thing. I got a new cell phone 6 months ago, and I keep looking at it. I can't even switch over because I can't even read the dials. It's so little.
Well, I saw a comedian the other night, and I'm going to ruin his joke because I wasn't really paying attention. But he was basically saying, pretty soon the cell phones will, you know, just do everything. And he starts, like, he's pretending he's talking to his girlfriend.
Right.
He goes, hold on, hon. And he pushes a button and shoots somebody. He goes, okay, I'm back.
It's the truth.
Yeah. Then I saw some other comedian that goes, let's go back. Let's go way back before there were cell phones. Let's go back to 1997. But you would think, Judge Judy, I heard on one of her shows, say to this girl, how old are you? She goes, 18. And she goes, why don't you use your cell phone? She goes, I don't have one. She goes, what planet do you hail from? I don't know an 18-year-old that doesn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I was growing up, I knew one mob guy that had a cell phone in his car, and you had to have the key to unlock it to make a call.
And it was the size of a...
It was like a princess phone in the middle of his car.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then one time I got the key and I made a call, and they knew right away because, like, every call is
$25. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it was just...
Well, now, I don't know how to text. I'm not interested in texting, but that's the big thing now, texting messages. What's this world coming to? I was in the grocery store yesterday, and this young lady has got her little kid in the cart, and she's pushing the... And they're in the cheese department, and she goes, over $5 for sliced cheese, telling her 3-year-old daughter, do you see what's going on, what this world's coming to? Over $5 for some sliced cheese? And she keeps walking, and then she's in another aisle, and she goes, oh, look, it's pudding, 2 for $3. Well, it's your lucky day. She's telling the 3-year-old it's your lucky day because you can get 2 puddings for $3. And that's what our world is coming to.
Well, my soon-to-be ex-wife is just under 20 years younger than me. And I'm not a texter because I have little tubby fingers. And she would constantly text me, and I'd get so annoyed. And first off, I'm a negative text reader. I'm a negative email reader. Like, if you email me, how you doing? I go, what do you mean by that? Or if you go, how's your mother? I go, why? What have you heard? I'm just not a good email guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't read. So she would email me, like, what time are you coming home? I go, why? You sleeping with the pool guy?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, every text would upset her. And I go, well, then don't text me. I'm not good at reading them and answering them.
Well, isn't it? It's just like typing tiny little, tiny microscopic.
Yeah, how much harder is it to push the one button that's already locked in that automatically dials the number and go, hello? We're so lazy now, our thumbs have to speak for us.
Or are you pushing a button and you wind up somewhere else? I mean, I don't know.
Oh, the best is when you pass the lady's got, and I'm sure men do this too, but I actually passed a woman that had lipstick in one hand and the phone in the other and would rotate what she's holding the wheel with, whether she was talking or doing the lips.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of followed her because I just thought she was going to hit somebody for sure.
Oh, my God. But you got your camera on your cell phone. Yeah. You got your camera on the cell phone. And now you can take movies moving.
Well, that's changed the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody is now a witness, and they can prove it.
That's true.
And they can prove it.
I still don't know how to take pictures with my camera.
Thank God my wild days were before cell phones.
Oh, my God. Well, we had some wild days, too, back then. I mean,
yeah,
these were the real wild
no
days.
No cell phones, though, so it was cool.
How do we survive? Phone booths.
Yeah. And by the way, they're going away.
They are?
Yeah, I read that AT&T is getting rid of most of their phones.
Whoa.
Yeah. So for you people that can't afford phones and you're in a terrible auto accident, hey, sorry.
That's it. On that note, it's the top of the hour. We have to move on.
Okay, thanks for chatting it up.
Hey, thanks, Alan.
All right, Stevens, everyone.
It's happy hour at Sandy Shore. We'll be back next Thursday. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Good night.